whenever I call it a jazz band, I do air quotes.
Why is that?
Jazz. Because I don't even know what that means anymore. Are you talking about Miles Davis? Are you talking about Wayne Shorter? Are you talking about Kneebody? You know, which I just got introduced to from Travis, who plays saxophone and is organizer. You know, Dataless did a record with Kneebody. He's a like experimental hip hop producer from LA. You know, they made a quote unquote jazz record together. It's like, I don't even know what that term means anymore. But we're all influenced by jazz. And the other three dudes in Disorganizer, Ryan and Michael and Travis, are
Let's give him a shout out by first and last names. Okay.
Yeah. So Ryan Nolan, he plays bass. Michael Carlson plays drums. And Travis Thacker plays saxophone.
Okay. So you're a free jazz band, or you're inspired by free jazz, or you embody free? How would you describe
it started?
Or don't you even want to describe it?
Well, no, I like to talk about it. I just don't, you know, the words we use to describe things are always so tenuous to me. Everything is in flux, you know. It started with me getting a secondhand drum set, and I was starting to try to play it like a jazz drummer. I'm a hack. I'm not a good drummer. And then I went into Carl's Pro Band, which is, you know, Travis's shop, and I remembered him from years ago. His old funk band in the early 2000s. Did some shows with a bluegrass band I was in. I played acoustic mandolin in a bluegrass band.
What was the band?
Free Space Music.
Okay.
It's like weird experimental bluegrass.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, we should get together and play sometime. So anyway, long story short, he comes over to my house. I play drums. He plays saxophone. We're just like improvising for about a half an hour, and then we stop. Then the next time he invited Ryan to play bass, and I'm still playing drums. And so Ryan's playing bass, I'm playing drums, Travis is playing saxophone, we're jamming, whatever. It's fun. Like, oh, maybe we should do this more often. So anyway, it got to the point where very quickly I said, I am a terrible drummer. Do you guys know a drummer? That's how I met Michael. They called in Michael, and he comes and he starts playing drums. And at first it was two drummers. I was playing drums, Michael's playing drums, Ryan's playing bass, Travis is playing saxophone. And then it just became kind of stupid. Like, I'm not a good drummer. Michael's really good. So I was like, you know, I play electric mandolin. I'm actually way better at that than I am at the drums.
Well, that sounds like a good decision then.
Yeah.
Two drummers in a 4-person band. I can understand maybe an 11-person band like Tedeschi Trucks. They've got two drummers, but they got 11 people in the band. All right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Allman Brothers.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. I want to get to what you're in here for, because you're playing the Black Lives Matter fundraiser coming up.
Yeah.
But you're a social studies teacher.
I am. I teach social studies at Normal Community High School. Okay. I teach sociology and U.S. history.
Do you incorporate music and or jazz into your curriculum?
I used to do it a lot more. I should probably revisit some of that stuff. But mostly I was using hip-hop. I wasn't really using jazz.
Okay.
Although when we have work days, like if my students are working on a project, I often am playing jazz. Music that they don't normally hear, I'm trying to play in the background while they're working. And often they complain. Like, Ms. Robinson, would you turn on, you know, I don't even know who they're listening to, Drake or whoever. Like, no, I'm not going to play that because it's not school appropriate. And I want to listen to, you know, the Pogues. So...
Well, I'm thinking it's a way, if you're teaching social studies, you're probably hitting the 50s, 60s, and 70s a little bit, too. I mean, I know it's...
Oh, absolutely.
So maybe you can make that connection if you're playing free jazz. A lot of those guys who were playing it back then in the 60s, whether it's Miles or, Pharoah Sanders or, I'm thinking, not Coleman Hawkins, but Ornette Coleman.
Oh, yeah, Ornette Coleman, yeah.
You know, all those people. I mean, a lot of what they were doing was associated with the civil rights movement or associated with what was going on at that time.
Absolutely. But the teenagers today in 2017... are going to resonate more if I bring in political hip-hop that's concerned with current civil rights stuff than they are going to with Ornette Coleman.
Sure.
And I've discovered that, you know. So I you know, I used to do a lesson with Mos Def, who's now Yasin Bey. He doesn't go by Mos Def anymore. But he did a remake of do you know that Jay-Z Kanye West song, N-Words in Paris? You know?
Do I look like I should know that song?
Mos Def did a cover of their song. He did redid all the lyrics, but the same beat, same rhythm, same, you know, cadence, basically. But he made it about poverty and living in poverty instead of living in decadence in Paris, you know? I'm psycho, I'm lipo, to go Michael, take your bit, And so I used to do this sociological lesson when we were talking about race stratification and inequality, and I would play the Jay-Z Kanye version, and then we would play the Mos Def version, and we would try to analyze the two. What are they saying? How do they compare? What's the message? Who's the audience? You know, these types of things to try to unpack racial stratification in the United States.
Do you find doing that really gets your kids' attention, keeps them involved?
I dance. So
you must be a must-have teacher in normal community, huh?
I don't know about that, but but you know, if your social studies teacher is like, you know, head bobbing and dancing around the room playing Mos Def, it gets people's attention.
Well, let's talk about a song or two from Disorganizer.
Okay.
Well, Brown Sabbath leads off the album.
Yeah.
Is that a play on Black Sabbath or what's that?
Yeah.
I mean, is it?
When we started, the rest of the guys are gonna hate me for saying this. We have terrible song titles. And they come out of jokes, usually. We're, like, playing a riff or whatever, and Ryan's playing this bass line, and somebody says, that sounds like some hacky version of a Black Sabbath, whatever. It's like, yeah, it's Brown Sabbath. It's, like, soft Black Sabbath, you know. A week later, that's what we're calling it. Some of the song titles I actually really like. Like, we have a song called It Shoots, It Hits.
Yeah, that's the last one on there.
Yeah, that title comes from Zen and the Art of Archery, this really famous book in the Zen world. The mythology of the story aside, I don't need to get into that, but it's this concept that, you know, when this guy was studying archery, he couldn't get it right. And then his teacher was basically getting him to think, trying to get him to the point where he doesn't think he is shooting the arrow. He's not shooting the arrow, just it shoots. It's hard for me to explain right now. We'd have to get into a whole Zen Buddhist discussion.
Kind of like the Matrix, maybe.
Maybe. But anyway, I wanted to compose this song, and we all compose songs together, but we all bring in ideas, right? So I brought in this idea, and I said, you know, roughly, I have this melody, I have this idea for the structure of the composition, but I want it to sort of build in a way where it just, the tension increases, increases, and increases, and increases, and then, like the guy holding this bow, all of a sudden the arrow just shoots. The guy doesn't ever let the arrow go, it just eventually shoots. And that's the right moment to end the song. That song is influenced by Ornette Coleman, very specifically. The melody is a very specific reference to Ornette Coleman.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. Stefan Robinson is joining me in the studio. I'm John Norton. We're talking about Disorganizer, the four-person, we'll call it loosely, a free jazz band.
Yeah.
And they're playing the Black Lives fundraiser here coming up at the Bistro. Let's get into it. You talked about how you talk about some of this in your class in Normal Community High School. You're playing the Black Lives Matter fundraiser. Why? Why do you want to play this?
Well, I think I can speak on behalf of everybody in the band, although I don't like to. I think I can say this with comfort, that we all, in various ways, attempt to be actively anti-racist, not just you know, what I might describe in my sociology class as passively anti-racist, actively anti-racist, in whatever context we can. To try to work toward a just society without the racial stratification that we see. You know, and we're playing appropriated music that comes from a Black history. You know, jazz is Black American, is a Black American art that white people appropriated, you know, just like rock, just like hip hop. And so one way that we can be actively anti-racist is to not just passively sit by. And when we have the opportunity to pitch in whatever way we can, we want to do it. And so I have worked with a lot of the organizers actively involved with Black Lives Matter in other contexts.
Okay.
And when Black Lives Matter started, I was invited to participate in that as well. And I have been, not to the extent that the primary organizers have. But you know, I kept thinking, like, what is something I can actually do that would be of value to this locally? Well, they need money for things. So I thought, hey, I would like to help organize a fundraiser. That's something that I can do. I'm good at that. I've booked tours. You know, I've been organizing shows since I was like 14 years old. And that's how we got involved. I was like, do you think Disorganizer should play? I said that to one of the Black Lives Matter folks. And they're like, of course Disorganizer should play. I was like, yeah, but we're all white dudes.
Well, that goes to something I want to address in all seriousness. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter had a protest outside University Galleries after the Bloomington mayoral forum between Kevin Lauer and Terry Renner. And a local blogger was, you know, really upset about that and saying a number of things. But one of the things that came out of it was, don't they realize Black Lives Matter hates white people? But she's not the only one who feels something like that. There's a real misunderstanding as to what a Black Lives Matter actually means and who it can incorporate.
Misunderstanding is putting it mildly. I am intimately involved with the people working in Black Lives Matter. None of them hate white people. that's not a thing.
I'll talk to people that'll say, well, you know, all lives matter.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard that a million times.
Absolutely. I have to have conversations with my students about this often. I wear my Black Lives Matter shirt to school weekly, you know, once a week. And I do it so that we can have these conversations. I'm not there to promote a specific agenda that I have outside of school, but to raise conversations so that students can have these dialogues.
Why is this such a politically charged term?
It boggles my mind. So, I've heard a lot of different people describe it in different ways. And I know you've spoken with Kaya Jayi, and maybe he spoke about it eloquently in a previous interview. I don't know. But it should not be a controversial statement to say Black Lives Matter. There is nothing controversial about that. If you truly believe that all lives matter, then Black lives are included in that statement.
I think some people would take that to mean that all lives don't matter, or white lives don't matter, or police lives don't matter when you say Black Lives Matter.
And I don't mean this in an insult way. I mean it just as a lack of knowledge. That's just ignorant. They have a lack of knowledge about what the movement is about. It is rooted in the very real situation that Black and brown people in this country are disproportionately impacted by some of the most egregious examples of inequality in this country, whether it's violence, whether it's income inequality, whether it's over-incarceration, whether it's disproportionate targeting in terms of drug laws, and I could go on and on. Hiring practices with Black-sounding names on applications, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a fact. It is a social fact that Black and brown Americans are disproportionately at a disadvantage in this country. And that isn't to say that poor white folks aren't also at a disadvantage, or middle class white folks can't be at disadvantages in certain categories. Absolutely they can.
Let's go to another track on the album, okay? The EP. Is it pronounced Cold Line or Coldine?
Cold Line.
It's Cold Line. Cold Line. So, yeah. Cold Line. What's Cold? Cold Line.
Well, this is
another one of those weird titles.
Another one of those fantastic titles that came out of, I think the song Hotline Bling was really popular. I think that's a Drake song. I'm not really...
I'm out of my element here on this one.
Yeah, I am too. Even though I teach people, you know, young people who listen to this stuff, I feel very out of touch. I used to be very in touch, by the way, when I was touring with Ye Big Kid Static, this hip-hop group I used to be in. I was very in touch with all of the new, like, you know, hot hits or whatever. I am no longer in touch. Yeah, so anyway, there was this song Hotline Bling that got very popular, and I don't know why we were like, oh, this is our cover of a Drake song. We're going to call it Cold Line Thing.
Okay.
It rhymes with hot. Bling rhymes with thing. And yeah, it's a terrible title. They're going to hate me for saying this.
Stephan Robinson, the band is Disorganizer. This is the most fun free jazz interview I think I've ever done. This is a lot of fun.
Remember, when you say jazz, you have to do air quotes.
Air quotes.
Free
you got to do air
jazz.
Quotes.
I'm doing air quotes right now.
Your trip, man. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. This is the most fun free jazz interview I've ever done, too.